episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt joins me, and while Jess is happily moving back to Indianapolis, David Lighting joins us as our guest host for the day today. So Matt and David, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good. Happy to be here.
Yes, welcome. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being a Patreon subscriber. So let's dive right into it, and I'll turn it over to Matt for our first topic of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And a special shout out to Mark Miles for joining us on our last episode last week. Hope you guys like that. He gave some really good answers to some tougher questions, some easier ones and some not so easy ones that we got some good opinions on. So we really appreciate him jumping on the show, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. But yeah, we'll jump right into Long Beach. I know that was, you know, what, 9 days ago now. Today's Tuesday. But yeah, we'll just recap Long Beach real quick. Top 10 from the race was Alexander Rossi, who had a stellar day, followed by Newgarden, Dixon, Ray Hall, Hunter Ray, Pagano, Power, Sato, Hinch, and Rosenquist rounding out the top 10. All right, Lighting, I know you just jumped on the show, but I'm going to test you out right away. What'd you think of the race?
Way to put me on the spot, Matt. Much appreciated. Yeah. So I'll have to say, to me, it was kind of that typical Long Beach race. I mean, historically, it hasn't been the most exciting race on the schedule. You know, I think Long Beach has been more known for the event and the weekend and the party and, you know, being right there on the ocean front, which looked like a greatest weekend as ever. But, you know, pretty standard race. Absolutely impressed with Alexander Rossi and the entire Andretti Autosport team. I think I mentioned in the Patreon group chat during the race that Rossi at Long Beach was starting to turn into Dixon at Watkins Glen in Mid-Ohio. So, yeah, just thoroughly impressed, and really hats off to him and that whole team for putting together a stellar weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that people categorize the race as boring, blah, 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 because you missed what a show that Alex Rossi put on. But that's sometimes what happens when you lead 80 out of 85 laps. It wasn't the best race ever. I don't think anybody can argue it was the best Long Beach race, but it was decent. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10 because...
No, we're doing that later. Don't do that.
Oh, we're doing that later?
Fine. We always do that later. Don't spoil it now. Don't spoil the fun.
Mike, even I knew not to do that.
Well, you know, sometimes I get excited and we haven't talked about the race and it's been 10 days. Fair. So I've had to hold in my opinions on social media and not say anything. It was a decent race, but not as bad as social media is making it out to be. But then again, that's pretty much the case with everything sports related.
I mean, the way I think about it is you watch your favorite sports team, football, basketball, baseball, whatever it is, and they blow a team out by, you know, 10 runs in a baseball game or 4 touchdowns in a football game. You don't turn around and say, oh man, that was such a bad game. You're pretty pumped that your team won. So I'm with you on that one, Mike.
I mean, as a Packers fan in 2018, I don't think you knew what that feeling was like, though, to watch your team blow out another team, did you?
Uh-huh. No, just come back when down by 20.
Too soon. It's all right. We'll make it up next year when we lose at Lambeau. Yeah, I think the race, I'm kind of on the group of fans that Mike's talking about, because I didn't really enjoy the race that much, to be honest. I mean, and you know, not every race is going to be 2013 Sao Paulo, but... yeah, it didn't do a whole lot for me. Obviously, driver skill was at a premium again. You know, impressed with everything the drivers do out there. Rossi was brilliant. A bunch of other drivers in the field were brilliant. But the way it was just displayed on TV, you know, and that's not blaming NBC per se, but just the way it looked on TV just didn't look that great of a race, to be honest. But that's fine. Now we'll move on to our next topic, which is we're going to rate the race. I decided to move that up just for Mike, just so he could get his opinion in, because I know he wants to do it. So, Mike, what do you rate the race at?
I'm going to go with a 5.5.
Just that? Any discussion, or just 5.5 and leave it there?
You know, it was a decent and maybe a touch above average, but if you are Alex Rossi, you give it a 10 out of 10. If you're everybody else, you give it a 5 out of 10 because you had no chance.
What about you, David?
I'm going to go a little bit higher than Mike there. Originally, I was thinking, you know, closer to a 6, but when I really thought about it, I'm going to give this race a 7 out of 10. Because the way I feel about it is, you know, you look back at races like, what was it, Barber 2015, when Pagenaud and Rahal were duking it out at the end there. That was just not a good race at all, but everyone remembers the finish. So I feel like when people look back at this Long Beach race, you know, they're going to remember A, Alexander Rossi just whipping up on the field, B, the Rahal blocking call at the end, which always, you know, caused some controversy and some talking points, which is always good coming out of a race, no matter which side you stand on. And lastly, I've been waiting ever since they converted to this configuration for somebody to end up in the flowers by the fountain. So the fact that that happened gets an automatic point bump in my book.
So if I had to rate 2016 Barber, which is that race you keep referring to, I would give that race a 3 because the race sucked. But if it wasn't for Graham Rahal, the race probably would have been a 2. And so in my opinion, I would give Long Beach a 3 just because, again, I wasn't entertained by it in the slightest. It had a kind of a sort of memorable finish, just like Barber 2016 with the Rahal Dixon thing, and we'll touch on that in a second. But yeah, I'll be the downer of the group and say 3. And I think since we're so – because usually Mike, Jess, and I are pretty close on this one when we rate past races, and since we're so far off, we might have to put this one on a Twitter poll and see what everybody says on our Twitter account, which is Pit Lane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y, because, yeah, we got one saying 7, one saying 5.5, and one saying 3. so we got quite the disparity there, but that's all right. So we'll see what everybody says on Twitter. But we did have a poll like we do after every race as far as the driver of the day. Obviously, you all, in my opinion, correctly said Alexander Rossi was the driver of the day, which I think us three would also agree on. So what we normally do in the past is we would just come up with who we thought deserves an honorable mention in that category. David, other than Rossi, was there one driver that stood out to you as being, quote-unquote, the second best?
To me, you don't have to look any further than Joseph Newgarden, to be honest. Not that he had this mind-boggling day where he, you know, jumped 6 positions from where he started, but just another solid effort by him and the Penske crew there. They gained 2 positions, and, you know, in the big picture for his championship chase, I mean, he's having a very Dixon-esque season so far, and I think Long Beach was just a prime example of that.
Since you stole who I was going to go with, I'm going to go a little bit down further in the field. He did finish 9th in James Hinchcliffe, but after starting 15th and not really having the greatest of luck all weekend, to salvage a top 10 finish and go out, you know, out of Long Beach with I think he's 8th in the championship standings right now. I will pull that up in the meantime. Let's see here. I can't find it as we talk, but you know, he didn't do anything amazing, but he, you know, he gained 6 spots in a race where there wasn't a ton of passing. You know, hats off to Hinchcliffe for having a solid race finish.
Yeah, he did really good. I really enjoyed watching him. Obviously, that aero car is one good-looking car. I'm trying to figure out who I would pick. By the way, if anybody's curious at home, the last time, you know, James Hinchcliffe finished 9th at Long Beach. Last time Danica Patrick finished 9th in an Indy car was in Edmonton in 2011, in case anybody wants to know that.
That's for you, Jess.
Shout out to Jess. Welcome back to Indy. She's back at home again in Indiana. I mean, I would go with Graham Rahal. I think, you know, obviously the blocking penalty, which is our next topic up here, took away a podium for him, even though I feel like had he not blocked, Dixon would have got that position anyways. But, you know, just a very quiet, methodical race from him prior to that block. Definitely is heading into the month of May with some solid momentum. Hopefully he can turn that into an actually good Indy 500 result. I think he's only really had one of those, and that was in 2011, unless my brain's escaping me on another one. So yeah, the Indy 500 is where his championship efforts have been held back, because he actually did have a very well above average 2015, 2016, and 2017. So good race for Graham. 4th place is nothing to hang your head on, and hopefully he does well at the Indy 500. But kind of on that topic, the blocking call, Mike, Do you agree with race control, or do you disagree with race control on the blocking penalty with Graham Rahal versus Scott Dixon on the final lap?
Before we get there, Hinchcliffe is seventh in the standings right now, not ninth. So
No, you finished the race in ninth.
Yes, I also said he's since ninth in the standings, so...
Sorry, I thought you were talking about me. Shame on me. Like, how dare you, sir?
No, shame on me. thoughts on the blocking call? I get it. The problem is the TV replays, they always were cutting off, and you just didn't run through the entire sequence. My biggest complaint is the lack of consistency in these blocking calls, because I think we've seen other instances, you know, either this year or in the past, where you could have called a more blatant block that hasn't been called. So for them to call this, you know, I harken back to what I've said, I think, like 3 weeks in a row now, I'm okay if they're going to call these things if they're going to call them consistent. Now, that being said, this is a tough one. I see the kind of like second move they're talking about after he smokes his tires and everything, but I don't think I would have really called that blocking.
What about you, David?
Yeah, I'm in the boat with Mike there. Just like Jess, I hate to agree with Mike on this one, but you know it's tough for me to look at that and say that was obvious blocking. And to Mike's point, if they are consistent with this moving forward, yeah, completely fine. I get it if that's the direction race control wants to head. But in my opinion, this was almost as bad as that blocking call on Elio at Edmonton a number of years back. I mean, that to me was worse. But this one, I mean, again, in my opinion, Graham moved first and, you know, Scott moved shortly thereafter. And to me, it was just racing hard on the last lap.
Yeah, so one thing I started doing with the Twitter account was just posting video clips of some of our favorite memories in past IndyCar races. And one that we just did was the 2013 Sao Paulo finish where James Hinchcliffe passed Sato on the last lap. And a lot of comments we got on that video were that of appreciation for race control, because on that back stretch in the last lap, Sato made like three moves. Like he went outside, then inside, then outside, dang near wrecked Hinch. But they didn't call it. And, you know, in my opinion, that's how it should be. If it's the second lap of the race and you got guys, you know, driving people into the wall down a straightaway, that's one thing. If we're talking the final lap of the race, you do anything you can to keep the car behind you. And like Rahal said in his interview after the race, he's like, hey, I was going to lose that position anyways, so I might as well have tried. And, you know, I respect that out of him. So I wouldn't have called it. I think there's got to be a fine line. It's like the unwritten rule of, if it happens in the final lap when you're going for a podium spot or the win, or even if you're a rookie trying to crack in the top 10, I think you let it slide. So I would have liked to not see a call. I was kind of disappointed, and I don't like any of those post-race antics or penalties or anything like that. So I'm just firmly against any of that, unless it's like ridiculously bad. Like if had Rahal put Dixon in the wall, I think that would have been a little different, but you know, I would let him race in the future if that was me in race control. But anyways, finally, I don't know if you guys have any final thoughts on Long Beach or, you know, anything. I saw, I believe it was my buddy Sean Kennedy on Twitter who is saying that Long Beach will be a lot better if the hairpin wasn't there. I don't know if you guys have ever thought about that idea, if you think it's a good idea, if you think the Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, should build their stadium and get rid of the hairpin. Mike, any thoughts on that, or do you think Long Beach is good as is?
It's an interesting idea that I haven't thought about. So if you're putting me on the spot, I would say keep the hairpin, but it's a very interesting idea. I don't think the Angel Stadium is going to be built anytime soon, if it ever gets built there. You know, politics and sports stadiums take forever to figure out, so we could easily see them move across the country or something, like most sports teams do when they don't get their stadium. So I don't think anybody has to worry about, you know, a complete track reconfiguration because of that, but I'm gonna have to go back and watch some Long Beach races and see if removing the hairpin would be a good idea. It's definitely interesting.
David?
Yeah, not a fan of moving or removing the hairpin, I should say. I think it creates for a pretty interesting run down the front straightaway because you really got to get that exit down just right. If there was anything I could change about this race, I would turn it into a standing start. I know IndyCar has, you know, tried that a number of times in the, you know, in the past decade, but, you know, I hate to sound like Robin Miller here, but I mean, you guys saw the start. I mean, there was, I think, 8 cars on the front straightaway when the green flag waved. I mean, you stretch the field out that much from the start. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I think you can get into a race where there is so little passing because you do have the field just so stretched out right from the get-go. So that's one thing I would change. I would bring a standing start back to Long Beach for sure.
Yeah. I mean, with the new cars, I was surprised they didn't actually go forward and try to figure out a new clutch system. Cause that's what we saw with, you know, Houston 2013 or Indy Grand Prix 2014 with some of the stalls that really, you know, hurt drivers' chances of getting started and things like that. So I wish they would have redone the clutch because the standing starts would be excellent on all road courses, in my opinion. Be kind of weird at Road America if someone's like starting on the hill. I don't know how that would work, but
very weird. I was there for the Champ Car 07 race for the standing start.
Did they do that? That's so
weird.
They
did. They started a little bit past the, you know, they weren't on the hill for that standing start, but it was definitely a little unique because I made sure to be on the front straightaway for that one.
I think it was like Tristan Gomity in the last row just stalling it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure either him or like Robert Dornbos or somebody just completely like jumped the start almost as bad as Ed Jones did at Barber. I do specifically remember that.
Not possible. Yeah, so standing starts would be really cool in IndyCar. When they did do those a couple years ago, that was excellent TV. And then when they got rid of them, I got pretty sad. But yeah, that's Long Beach. I've been kind of dragging it out a little bit because I'm not really looking forward to this next debate just because us three have seen this debate going on Twitter for about last 2 weeks now.
I don't know what you could be talking about.
Well, I don't know. I'm ready for it to die, though. I'm honestly over it. I'm honestly over certain people out there using it for attention and then posting controversial stuff and then wondering why people disagree with them or just to get like 30,000 people to look at them and say, oh, I agree with you. And we are obviously talking about the Indianapolis 500 debate when it comes to qualifying. And now we've had 3 owners who have come out and stated that they would be in favor for guaranteed entries for full-time drivers. That would be Roger Penske, Chip Ganassi, and Michael Andretti. We've seen a couple prominent people kind of come out against it. Jonathan Bird, Oriel Servia today came out against it. And then in our last episode, Mark Miles said for at least 2019 that it's not happening, which is a sigh of relief. So we could actually just save this debate for 8 months from now, if anything. But David, I guess we can start with you. I might have missed you saying anything on Twitter about it. I'm pretty sure you probably have, and I'm pretty sure I can guess what your opinion is, but you can go ahead and rant all you want about it.
So things like this, I stay fairly quiet on, especially when you start talking about traditions and things that have been longstanding. So one of my biggest pet peeves, whether it comes to IndyCar racing or I talked about aviation in my last appearance on the show. I work in that industry. And one of the things that people in both groups are extremely guilty of that drives me crazy is harking back to the good old days and how good something was, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever it was. But think about it this way. No matter if you first attended the Indianapolis 500 in 1969 or you attended it in, 2009, the first time you go to the race is going to be the best Indy 500 you ever go to. So I think we're fooling ourselves if we're saying that, you know, by changing this rule, we're going to drive people, you know, new fans away from the sport. Because honestly, if someone becomes a fan of the sport within the next, you know, year or two, this tradition doesn't mean as much to them. Now, is it going to hurt the longtime fan? Yeah, absolutely. And my personal opinion is don't take bumping away. I think bump day is just as exciting as race day. You know, I think it's one of those things that does separate the Indianapolis 500 from every other race out there. And it does add to the excitement of the event. But I do agree a little bit that, you know, as important as tradition is to an event like this, sometimes to me, that's a cop-out answer, again, because you can't just always rely on tradition. There's tons of traditions with this race that have been broken and, you know, the previous 102 years. But from an entertainment standpoint and from what I enjoy and I think other fans enjoy, I think you got to keep bumping. I mean, last year was absolutely thrilling. I mean, I was completely gutted for Hinch and Pippa to see them miss the field. But to see a guy like Connor Daly stick the car on the field that was essentially a road course car a week before is, you know, that's pretty dang cool. So I prefer to keep it and, you know, enjoy bumping for many years to come. But that's just my two cents.
Yeah, I almost word for word agree with everything you said, but I'll expand on it a little bit. And I have been pretty quiet on this on social media just because I'm trying to avoid any battles and just go about my day. But yeah, I mean, listen, there's been plenty of traditions that have been broken. I think bumping is exciting. I really hope that NBC puts on a good TV package for it on Sunday this year, because if the TV numbers are really good for bump day, I think the owners are going to go, well, it's probably in the best interest if we keep our mouths shut going forward, because you know, what drives IndyCar this year is, you know, getting those TV numbers up. That being said, I hope it doesn't go away, but if it, eventually it does and they come to some sort of compromise, I think all of our followers out there, or I'd say maybe 98% of them, are still going to watch the race. So if you want my opinion, I don't want it to go away, but I kind of see where certain people are coming from. I've referenced this article a couple times, but if you read Jim Aiello's article, which I think came out right after bump day last year, is a pretty good case against bumping. And you know, if I can find the article, I'll get Jim to send it to me. We'll post it again, because it does a good job of rationalizing getting rid of bumping. Not that it's my opinion, and don't go attacking Jim for it. He's a good man. Give him a little bit of a break, guys. The social media comments have been a little ridiculous. But, you know, I'm all for a good, well-thought-out debate like he writes out there.
Yeah, how dare you, sir? How dare you say that if they get rid of bumping that people will stick around? Because I won't. I'll be out of here. No, I'm just kidding.
And we'll fire you.
Yeah, can I be on the show still if I don't watch? And I remember that Jim Aiello article, because I'm pretty sure I responded to him, this is a trash opinion, but I respect you for sticking up for yourself, which was about the nicest way I could put it. Because if it was like Jenna Fryer, I probably would have just said this is a trash opinion. But yeah, I mean, Jim Aiello, he does a great job of rationalizing it. And he does, you know, when his recent rundown, or even Jenna's rundown today, like, I still don't like her, but, you know, I can kind of see their point. You know, owners are probably scared to death that in a spec series, you know, you might not make the field. There's nothing saying that, you know, Joseph Newgarden goes out there, crashes his first car, and is in deep trouble for making it in. That's a realistic possibility. Now, do I think it's going to happen? No. But, you know, this isn't like the 80s or 90s where Michael Andretti would show up in a Newman Haas car and pretty much do four laps and then worry about, you know, the race setup for the rest of the week, because Newman Haas was significantly better than Dale Coyne Racing back in the day. But nowadays, the gap's so close that you can kind of see where they're coming from. But at the same time, I also want to tell them to just shut up and make the field, because that's how everybody else in the past has had to do it. So the debate will not end based on our three words. It'll continue for months and months and months. And I guess we will all wait and see what the powers that be decide. Hopefully they decide correctly, but I guess it's up to you to decide what is quote unquote correct.
One more thing. I was watching the... God, I forget what year it was. One of the early 90s bump days on YouTube last night. And Gary Bettenhausen was eventually bumped from the field, I believe, because he was disqualified from day one of qualifying due to some wing angle error. I think it was like a thousandth of an inch in the wrong direction that he got penalized for. And the announcers were electric, because Gary Bettenhausen, who had raced in, I don't know, 18 or 19 Indy 500s, at that point was in danger of getting bumped, and I think eventually did get bumped. So if you see something like that happen this year with, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to say Joseph Newgarden since you said it. Or even somebody, you know, like a local favorite, like Ed Carpenter. Can you imagine how electric that place is going to be? And the TV announcers are going to be losing their minds and social media is going to be crazy. TV numbers will definitely not suffer because of that. So if, you know, definitely look back to those old, you know, years of bumping and see who got bumped and the craziness of what happened. It's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, like, and just real quick before we get to the next topic, just like we discussed with Hinge getting bumped, is that something that we will be talking about for years and years and years and years and years? Just like we talk about the 95 bump day with Penske getting sent home. We will be talking about that for years and years and years and years and years. And it just creates history, creates something memorable leading up to the race. And then it just goes to show that, you know, even the best can fall. So you got to earn your spot.
Yep.
Absolutely. And because you two did it, now I'm going to do it. I thought of two more things during this conversation. To your point, Matt, we're going to talk about Hinch being bumped forever. And I feel like the positive publicity that that team and Arrow got out of, you know, how they handled that situation was extremely more positive than if Hinch would have qualified 15th and finished the race 10th. So as far as like a sponsorship perspective goes, I feel like they almost made out in that sense. And lastly, to me, the format of bump day this year, kind of going back to what Mike talked about, I hope NBC is able to put on a thrilling production of that. But I am a little concerned that it's not going to be as thrilling as some of the bump days past, where you have people sprinting down pit lane, you know, pushing their car to the qualification line or pulling their time or going out on track when they're already qualified 33rd, but they're worried they're going to get bumped. You know, those elements from bump day are already removed. So again, that kind of weakens the point or the argument to keep bump day a little bit, in my opinion, just because this is a bit of a watered down approach to the historical bump day. But I'll end it there.
Time for me to jump back in now. Great point. And Mark Miles did mention that, you know, the new format this year. I was talking about this with our buddy George this morning, actually. I wonder if, because, you know, whoever's, you know, in the I forget what it's bump day shootout, let's call it, in the morning. And I know that's not what it's called, so don't crucify me for that one. Is somebody going to stuff it in the wall because they know they've got one attempt and they have to nail it? You know, are you going to see somebody, you know, take out extra too much downforce? Are you going to see somebody, you know, go in at the wrong angle? And, you know, it's so that's what I'm most intrigued about, is the potential for, you know, just the drama of you get one attempt and if you screw it up, you're done.
I just for the sake of ending the debate, I don't think Danica Patrick was ever bumped.
You would be correct. Another. That's a. We're just giving Jess extra gifts to listen to as she unpacks her stuff this week.
Right, Jess, when you're unpacking your cheese on Friday, just know that we're thinking of you and all of your love for Danica Patrick. All right. Well, we'll wrap that up. We'll move it on. Just a couple quick Indy 500 updates. So we now are up to 35 confirmed entries for the race. We are expecting 36 total, so there's only two driver announcements still to be made, I think, with Juncos still needing to announce their driver, and then the third Schmidt-Peterson car still needing their formal driver announcement. As reported by Marshall Pruitt yesterday, Monday, they are down to four drivers for that seat: Carlos Munoz, Stefan Wilson, Mikhail Aloshin, and Oriol Servia. However, by the time you're listening to this this weekend, you'll have realized that Oriol Servia was testing for the team on Wednesday, which is tomorrow for us, at the IMS official test. He's actually just going to be the official test driver for that car. However, according to Jim Aiello, it's not for certain yet if he'll actually be the driver for the race, which to me is a giant question mark. Why wouldn't they pick him at this point? But you know what? We'll just keep going with the formal PR standpoint that they haven't announced him yet. Also, you know, J.R. Hildebrand was announced at Dry and Ribold Racing. There is a 99.8% chance that we don't get a second Harding car, which was as said by Brian Barnhart. Like I said, Juncos is only expected to field one entry. They were thinking about two for the longest time. Doesn't sound like that's going to happen. And finally, Rich Energy, who is famous for thinking they're better than Red Bull, and for sponsoring Haas F1 team, is also jumping on board with Jordan King, who's in the Rahal Letterman car, the third car. So it'll be his first oval appearance. Mike, thoughts on anything I just mumbled?
Yeah. The Serbia testing and not potentially racing thing isn't the craziest thing I've heard of or heard. You know, we've seen kind of guys come and test and then, you know, disappear. Not so much for the Indy 500, but it's happened before. Do I think it's going to happen here? No. Serbia's been rumored to be in this seat forever. I heard him stand behind me in the media center. I think it was at the Circuit of the Americas test, and he said he had everything done, whoever he was talking to behind me. So I think we'll be fine there. I think I mentioned that months ago on the air, too.
Come on.
Juncos is not surprising. I hope they can get a car in there. At this point in the season, I feel most disappointed by them. You know, they got 10 races last year and put all that effort into their IMSA team this year, and now they're going to race maybe one more time after the Indy 500 this year. It seems like a big letdown. And the mysterious Rich Energy. The energy drink that nobody can figure out where to actually buy it, even in the UK.
You've heard of them.
Outside of that, they people in the UK have heard of them, but they don't know where to get it, which I still don't understand. But you know, good for Jordan King to get some extra sponsorship. Maybe that'll turn into some a few more races for the rest of the year. And I really hope after the first day of Indy 500 practice that Jordan King is leading, so we can see Jordan King is the best driver ever. Rahal is the best team ever type tweets from Rich Energy. If that happens, I will buy everybody in Indianapolis a beer.
Wow. You've heard it there first. That's quite
breaking the news.
Coming to Mike. David, make sure you're in town. All right. What are your thoughts, David?
So can't hate on Servia if he's the guy that fills the final Schmidt seat. Always fun to see him race around the speedway, especially when you think back to what he did last year and how he moved through the field and had some pretty exciting moves. But I would be gutted if Carlos Munoz didn't somehow make it in the field this year. And obviously it's looking like that's not going to happen. But for a dude that's been so impressive at the speedway, I'd love to see him back there again in a quality ride. You know, I can't say I'm too bummed, or I would be too bummed if it wasn't Stefan Wilson. You know, seems like a great dude, obviously comes from a great family, but you know, I've never really viewed him as a guy that has a legitimate chance around the speedway. And as far as Alotian goes, potentially being in that Schmidt seat, you know, Mike alluded to it earlier. You know, if there's a guy that's going to stuff it in the wall trying to make it in the field, it's going to be him. So let's save Schmidt Peterson the money and keep him out of the seats, as exciting as he is. But that's kind of where I stand. I do agree with Mike that I'm pretty disappointed to see where Juncos is at this year. You know, it seemed like they were pretty excited to be in this series, you know, full time at some point in the future, but it's looking like that may be less and less of a possibility, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, out of those four, I would take Serbia. If my brain were making the decision, but if my heart were making the decision, I would go with Mikhail Alotian. And if my gut were making the decision, it would be Carlos Munoz. So I'm trying to figure out what part of my body would say Stefan Wilson.
All of it.
Yeah, all of it, because I really like the guy. There we go. I don't know what, other than my brain, what part makes, you know,
I just want to throw the disclaimer out there. I'm not hating on Mikhail Alotian. I think dude was incredibly exciting on ovals. I'm just saying, if anyone's going to put it in the long qualifying, it's definitely him.
Just you watch. Watch Serbia crash on bump day, and I will be laughing at you, David.
If that happens, I will buy, I'm not going to say everyone, but I will buy every Patreon subscriber to Pit Lane Parlay a beer. So if you don't subscribe already, you better subscribe just in case he puts it in the wall and I owe you a beer.
Honestly, that's the best sales pitch we've had for Patreon in a couple episodes. I'm not going to lie. Good job, David. You should be our marketer. I tried to bribe people with cheese. I don't know if that worked very well.
Worked for me.
Beer definitely is a good bribe.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like all of Indianapolis. Better hope Mike's wrong.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm wrong.
We got a couple livery updates. So Ed Carpenter is jumping into the preferred freezer ride for the first time. That now pretty well-known blue livery that Ed Carpenter's racing runs every year. They have so since 2013. Marco Andretti's livery, you know, as much as we don't like the guy, it looks pretty stellar. It was released on the Today Show with Dad Michael and Granddad Mario. It's a tribute to Mario's 1969 Indianapolis 500 livery. It looks really good, really eye-catching, really bright. I don't even know what you call it. Orange, red.
Day glow, orange, red.
Yeah. Connor Daly's livery got released today. Looks fantastic. A very good tribute to the Air Force and the Air Force past. Will serve the Air Force very proud in the month of May, and really looking forward to that. J.R. Hildebrand announced his livery today. Looks a lot similar to the one he had last year. Looks pretty cool. Will Power's black matte Verizon 5G car. Oh, looks phenomenal. I think it's up there. Probably one of my favorites, maybe even ever. Right now in the field, I think the only one that does it better is Max Chilton's car, but that Verizon car looks amazing. And to kind of segue into tomorrow's test, because we have no idea what's going to happen, lighting. Is there an early prediction for who do you think is going to do super good and who do you think is going to struggle?
Marco Andretti is going to have the fastest time or fastest lap tomorrow, and everybody is going to freak out and say this is Marco's year, and I'm telling you right now, it is not. It never will be. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. I've been holding that one in.
Wait, so you're saying Marco's not going to win this year?
No. And if he and if Marco does,
oh great, here we go.
I will buy all of the Patreon subscribers a bottle of whatever beverage they like.
Ooh, Macallan 12 coming up.
Yeah, we're stepping it up here.
All right.
Maybe even I'll even buy Mark Miles a bottle of one of his, you know, French wines that he talked about last week.
Oh, good tie-in.
Yeah. So for someone that's going to struggle, you know, I'll be honest, I'm a little concerned about the Foyt team. I know they had a really good showing last year, but and I know Indianapolis is a completely different animal from any other track that's out there. But, you know, that momentum and that, you know, kind of that, you know, confidence has to transition to the speedway. And for the team's sake, I hope that they don't struggle because they could really use a win. But I don't have a ton of confidence in them. This may even, you know, regardless of how they performed last month or last year.
All right. So I'm going to jump in here. First off, Will Powers, matte black Verizon 5G livery is definitely one of my favorite of all time. And as soon as the diecast is available, I will buy probably more than one.
How about everybody on Patreon?
If Will Power wins the Indy 500 for a second year in a row, everybody who subscribed to Patreon will get a Will Power diecast.
Wow.
I it's a good thing our accountant is on this episode because we are now going to go broke after the month of May. Sorry, Jess. But that being said, Marco's tribute to Mario is really cool. I like how they did that. The one little detail that a few people mentioned is the 98 number that they have above the or right in front of the back wheel. I hope other cars do that for the month of May, or we start seeing that in general. Kind of a neat place to put the number that stands out versus the LED screen at time. That being said, who's going to do well tomorrow? I was going to say Andretti, so I'm going to switch it up and say, well, we know that Penske's going to sandbag tomorrow. We all know that's going to happen. So I think somebody like James Hinchcliffe is going to have a strong day. He's typically pretty strong in Indy outside of last year. You know, 2016 was on the pole, and I think in 2017 his month was pretty solid overall. So I'll give Hinchcliffe the nod to a good day tomorrow. Who's going to struggle tomorrow? I'm going to say Jordan. Is Jordan King testing tomorrow? I honestly don't have the list up in front of me right now.
Let me check. Keep talking. If
okay,
how about the background? Oh, Jordan King's not testing tomorrow.
Jordan King's not testing tomorrow, so he's definitely going to struggle. I'm going to say, only because he hasn't been in the car in weeks, that we might not see much from Charlie Kimball tomorrow. It might be more of a, you know, getting reacclimated to the seat sort of test for him versus going for speed. So that's my pick to struggle. Sorry, Charlie.
Yeah, my good prediction would be probably Alexander Rossi. Guy can wheel it. My dark horse prediction would be Jack Harvey. Interested to see what he can do with his new oval chassis. Something that we have to keep in mind that they may actually have an improved form this year. As far as who's going to struggle, you know what? You know, Fernando Alonso, he doesn't have the best team behind him anymore. So I'm really interested to see how well he does. I'm really interested to see how well he stacks up against guys like Chilton and Charlie Kimball. So, because, you know, that's what his benchmark's going to be. And, you know, maybe he doesn't get out of the bottom 10. Who knows? I think it depends on how much he does as far as running individually versus in the pack and where we go from there, because that's one thing to keep in mind tomorrow. The fastest lap will probably be a toe speed. Can I, like, rant real quick about how little I care about toe speed versus no toe speed? People like to spend hours and hours and hours discussing that and figuring out who had the fastest no toe speed and things like that. And honestly, if I had to pick one that I was fastest in, I'd probably be the faster toe speed. Just gonna be honest, I'd rather have a good race car than a good qualifying car. I mean, obviously you'd want to get in the field first, but toe speed versus no toe speed is one of the most over discussed things on social media in May. So yeah, not looking forward to that, to be honest, but fastest lap tomorrow will probably be a toe speed. So I hope it's Rossi at first.
I am going to do nothing but send you Snapchats of the no-toe and toe speed tomorrow.
Don't.
So I realized I completely glossed over the livery discussion before I jumped into the test. So I'll just throw my two cents in that I think Connor Daly's got the sweetest livery of all time with the nod to the P-40 World War II fighter, the Flying Tigers, and the modern-day A-10. Absolutely sick livery. Love the matte gray, and hope to see that thing up front this year. Just had to throw that in there.
Cool.
Yeah, his driver suit is fantastic as well.
Yeah, 100% correct. Mike, I think it's time for some Patreon.
All right. So since I accidentally skipped him last week, one of our newest Patreon members, shout out to Minnesota native Tyrone Russell. I think you're about to be related to Matt, so I'm sorry about that.
Oh, come on.
Thank you, Stephen King. Thank you to another new member, Stephen A. Clark, Sean Crawford. Thank you very much. Mike Silver, Mr. Mike Knapp. See in a couple weeks. If you see Mike tomorrow, he will be at the test. And let's wrap it up this round with a thank you to Michelle.
Yes, thank you all so much. And I feel bad because these two have been offering you beer and willpower cars and things like that, and I got nothing to offer you. So if I don't like Elio Castroneves. So if Elio Castroneves wins his fourth Indianapolis 500, I will personally mail you all one Danica Patrick fact. How about that?
handwritten?
Yeah, handwritten. That is better than alcohol and Will Power's car. That gets you to places. Figuring out her favorite mashed potato recipe is the bomb. So we are moving on to the next round here. McLaren has once again done their usual PR stuff, which is kind of saying nothing while saying a lot of things at the same time. Zach Brown said at Long Beach that it's not a matter of if McLaren is full-time in the future, but a matter of when. And Mark Miles was talking about it with us last week, and he said that it's not necessarily going to be Fernando Alonso who's full-time. Alonso himself at Texas, his test a couple weeks ago, did say that he wasn't necessarily going to be closing the door on a full-time IndyCar season. So who the heck knows these days? I know Jess, if she was on the show, would be rolling her eyes right now. Surface Paradise, we've been talking about that plenty on the show. Doesn't look like it's going to happen in 2020, unfortunately. Probably has a lot to do with the date. I know IndyCar really wants a February date, and Surfers probably wants to stick with October. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any race in Australia in 2020, unfortunately. And finally, to kind of shamelessly plug our Mark Miles interview again, one thing to report again from that interview, if you missed it, that he said there would be no NASCAR-y type rules in IndyCar for the foreseeable future. Thank God. That includes things like green, white, checkered, playoffs, things like that. He said that we're pretty far away from doing those kinds of rules and doesn't see the need for them. Lighting, you got any thoughts on those three things?
The only thing I would say is as much as I love surfers and think it's a sweet venue, there's a lot of other races I'd prefer to see added to the schedule. You know, something maybe in the South that could fill the void that we're experiencing right now between Long Beach and the Grand Prix of Indianapolis or whatever they're calling that race now. You know, a place like Richmond would be awesome, or Kentucky, or something like that, you know, just to get some oval time in before the 500.
Yeah, McLaren, I think we said this on our season preview episode. I'm not going to get excited or even really concern myself with any sort of McLaren in the future updates until something is actually announced. Otherwise, we're just going to get tired and, you know, roll our eyes like Jess probably is just listening to the McLaren news. And yeah, I mean, huge shout out to Mark Miles for all of his answers last week, but you know, not trying to get into any NASCAR rules, like he mentioned, is probably one of the best things he said. So, and you know, obviously we shared a clip of it on our social media. So thank God for that.
All right, rookie, time to stump the host. Take us down.
You guys are going down. All right. So last May, Will Power was the first IndyCar driver to sweep the month of May by winning both the Grand Prix road course race and then the 500, of course. So being a Wisconsin boy, I had to put a little bit of a Wisconsin spin on this question. Oh, as many of the listeners know, there used to be kind of a doubleheader in Wisconsin, so to speak, with Road America and the Milwaukee Mile both on the schedule. So from 1982 up until 2006, IndyCars ran on both Road America and the Milwaukee Mile. However, in that time frame, there was only one driver to complete the Wisconsin sweep, and he accomplished this twice, which of course Will Power is trying to be the first driver to do the month of May sweep twice. Who was it? And bonus points if you can name the years that he accomplished this feat.
That's a good one.
Matt, I'll let you guess first.
My first guess, I'm trying to think, is who did really good at Road America twice. My first guess is going to be Zanardi.
Michael Andretti.
And winner, winner, chicken dinner. Mike, can you name the years?
Boy. let's see. Can you give me the year time frame again?
Yep. So the races ran in the same year from 82 to 06. And I'll give you even more of a hint. Both of Andretti's, you know, Wisconsin sweeps happened in the 90s.
As I say, he raced from 83 to 02 in that era of those tracks. So
1991?
Correct.
Oh, and 1996.
I think you cheated, Mike.
I honestly, I will share my screen right now, and I have nothing up about the Milwaukee Mile. I am looking at an article about George Russell.
So interesting facts about those 2 years. 91 was the year of the Andretti sweep on the podium at the Milwaukee Mile. There was three Andrettis that stood on the podium. And in 1996, that was the year that Little Al was leading the race at Road America, and his engine blew coming out of Canada Corner, and Andretti won, you know, essentially in that last little stretch up the hill to the checkered flag. So barely happened in 96, but yeah, if I was thinking you guys were going to guess either Paul Tracy or like Sebastian Bourdais, because both of them had wins at both tracks, but good job, Mike.
All right.
Yeah, we often accuse him of cheating. And also, Rain Effect, you know, watching the 1996 Road America race at CART is what gave me the idea for driver ratings, because I felt so bad for Little Al. The guy did everything right and comes home like 13th or something. I'm like, wow, what does the guy got to do to, you know, get some recognition for that? Because all it's going to show up is a goose egg in the scoreboard. But that's what I'm like, you know what? There's got to be a way to account for this. So anyways, yes, lighting, good job. And Mike, I am impressed by your Googling skills.
I didn't Google this one.
It's kind of a hard one to Google, to be fair. All right, a couple more topics to touch on before we slam some people in our pitfalls. Kind of a weird dialogue Chip Ganassi had with Jim Aiello. Aiello asked Ganassi if he had any discussions with Pato O'Ward after he was released from Harding about driving for the team. Ganassi said, quote, "We had a couple of sophomoric conversations, and that is what he was going to leave it at. I don't know if we should read too much into that, Mike? Question mark."
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he was probably being dramatic because he's Chip Ganassi and he wanted to be dramatic. And there's probably absolutely nothing to it. But it was, I mean, I'm glad that Jim, you know, didn't, you know, delete that part out of his article, because it had everybody going, what? Because, you know, I think I said that like Jess usually does too. You know, Pato comes off as a guy who's, you know, pretty, you know, very well spoken for being 19 or 20 years old. So, you know, sophomoric conversation, maybe in terms of business and not, you know, the way Pato and him talked. Okay, maybe I could see that, you know, being, maybe the conversations were very basic and they didn't go into a lot of detail about business or whatever. Maybe that's how he meant it and it just came across wrong. But it definitely raised some eyebrows.
Yeah, definitely surprised to hear that, because Pato seems like a very well spoken for guy, especially considering his age. But knowing the time that some of those conversations may have happened, I can imagine, you know, Pato probably found himself in a pretty stressful situation. And as we all know, you find yourself in stressful situations. Sometimes you're not, you know, you're not fully there, you're not fully yourself. So maybe not totally surprising, but yeah, I don't know if there's a ton you can really read into that.
All right, so a couple more things to touch into. I agree with both of you, by the way. I don't really have an opinion. I'm sure Pato did nothing wrong. Aaron Tielitz and Jimmy Vassar have a good thing going, apparently. I believe Tielitz drove for Vassar at Daytona for the IMSA race. Vassar is intent on getting Tielitz into IndyCar in 2020. Keeping in mind that Vassar, who is a co-entrant on Sebastian Bourdais's car, is insistent on getting back to IndyCar full-time on his own. So maybe something to keep your eyes out for. Chris Windham is going to be back at the Freedom 100 this year with Ballardi and NOS sponsorship. Windham entered last year, but unfortunately had an accident leading up to the Freedom 100, so did not enter the race itself. So that was unfortunate, but we'll see him back attempting again this year. Also in the Freedom 100, we got Jarrett Andretti. Gosh, is that John's son? Sorry, I'm lacking the Andretti family tree here, but that's John's son. So that's cool to see another Andretti. And finally, the F1 race to Miami is delayed. Literally on the rundown, I said insert something shocking here, because nobody is surprised by that. Is that fair? Anything to touch on before we get to pitfalls?
I am pulling for Chris Windham this year. His Indy Lights car with the NOS sponsorship on the side looks awesome. And before we get to the pitfalls, let me get through the other Patreon list here. And then a quick little announcement. So thank you to Colin Taylor, another new patron, Darcy Bretz. I guess I can thank David since he's talking with us right now. Our buddy George, Jason Camps, thank you, Carrie Chim, and thank you, Lyndall McMurphy. Oh, sorry, two more. I don't want to skip anybody. Michael Goodyear and Matt Grunholz, thank you, everybody. I know the list is getting longer now. And two quick announcements. We are now partnered, as of literally about 27 minutes ago as we were recording, with the earplug company, Eargasm Earplugs. They are worn by musicians and people in construction to keep their ears safe. So if you're around a racetrack, they're good to have. And I'll have an order page set up where you can get 15% off with one of our promo codes at some point next week. And since he's our guest, why don't we let David lead it off with a pitfall if he has one?
All right. So my pitfall of the week, being on short notice, I struggled to find one of these, but David Lighting's pitfall is the entire Pit Lane Parlay hosting crew for trusting me to be a guest host this evening.
That's a fair point.
No, well, hang on a second. We seek talent. It's not easy to replace Jets, and we are always going to fall short when we try to do that, but I feel like we did an okay job.
I think so. I'm going to give him a hard time, but I think he's okay.
So if I had to give a serious pitfall, this is just off the top of my head right now. It would be to who NBC is choosing to kind of make the face of their Indy 500 promotion. Now, the only reason I say that is I understand that the Andretti family is an iconic name in racing. Nobody can question that, especially considering what Mario and Michael did. But I feel like, you know, I know how much we all love Marco. The odds of him having a very successful month of May and then rest of the season is slim to none. So I would have preferred if they could have identified somebody else in the field with a better chance of, you know, showing well during the month of May and throughout the rest of the season as kind of being their face of the promotional efforts thus far with, you know, the Today Show and Jimmy Fallon and those sorts of things. Because in addition to that, and this isn't supposed to be a knock on Marco because everyone has their strong suits, but he's also not the most charismatic driver in the paddock. And it would have been nice to see somebody like Newgarden or Hinch or, you know, one of these guys that is great in front of a camera be on those television shows.
Yeah, I see your point. I mean, the thing is the Andretti name is so marketable for the average fan. I get it, but fair point. Matt, do you want to go next?
Yeah, so mine is a nice little shout out to TNT. They're doing some promos right now for the NBA playoffs, and they had this very, very cringeworthy one for the Indiana Pacers that made a lot of IndyCar fans on Twitter, you know, shake their head. And in contrast, I'm pretty sure whoever's running the Rich Energy account got fired, and TNT looked at their tweets and like, yep, we want that person to run our Twitter. Because that's what it seemed like. But anyways, so their little promo their tweet says the Pacers are ready to race through the East with a little checker flag emoji. And their poster is two of their players in front of what looks like a Corvette, if I had to bet money on it, at Daytona, racing the wrong direction, keep in mind. And the caption for the picture says, "We grow basketball." Yes, nothing says the Indiana Pacers like a close top car at Daytona. It's...
With the phrase, "We grow basketball."
We grow basketball. On a racetrack, apparently. There's just so many things that are wrong with this picture. I just don't even know where to start.
Well, did you know when there were horse posts at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, there were also basketball trees?
I guess. Man, Larry Bird didn't come from nowhere. He had to come on a tree from somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was bad. I saw they did take that down and put up an actual Indianapolis Motor Speedway
too
one.
Late. Too late.
But, funny thing about that is if anybody saw the Celtics one was equally as cringeworthy. I forget why, because they deleted that one too. But yeah, that was a very poor marketing effort. So I'll wrap it up. Just a quick pitfall. And yet again, I am pitfalling Team Williams. I think I should just pitfall them every week for the rest of the year, because that's kind of what it seems. It's just it's like the low hanging fruit. another strange quote from George Russell, who you have to feel bad for because he's an extremely talented kid on the worst F1 team ever. George Russell thinks he may be better driving the car at 98% effort than maximum effort to extract more speed out of his Williams Formula One car. I'm not sure how one, in basic math, I don't think 98% is greater than 100%. But then again, when you're Williams and you've done everything wrong all year, maybe it will work. Maybe backwards is forwards. And there was another depressing quote he had here at the very end where he said, you know, "I hope we improve with some of the car changes, but at the moment, there's nothing suggesting that will be the case." So again, I'm going to go with Williams. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's kind of like they're, you know, maybe they need to hire a new Whittler. I don't know.
They need to hire Rich Energy.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I also forgot to say, hey, David, thanks for coming on. You're awesome. I'll probably see you in a couple weeks here, actually. Things are happening pretty soon.
You guys are awesome, and looking forward to being out in the land of the hickeys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Congrats, Matt. And thank you, David, for joining us. Everybody, I think Jess will be back next week, assuming she's all unpacked and ready to go. We will be back next week, and we'll talk about the test and some month of May stuff probably. And I think we can wrap it up. I will play the role of Jess this week. So, guys, keep your lug nuts tight.